from NPR and Chicago Public Radio. This is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Korva Coleman, in for Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Korva. Great show for you today. Thank you, everybody. Moby, the musician, will join us later to play our game, but first, just to allay any concerns you might have whenever Carl takes a week off, as millions of fans do worry, has he finally come to his senses and realized what this show is doing to his reputation? No. Not yet. Be at ease. He's got jury duty this week. Really. True facts. And Carl has promised that if he does get impaneled on a jury, he at least will allow the 11 other jurors to express their opinions before, as is his wont, he will simply announce the truth. So it is written, so let it be done. You can render your judgment or indicate your lack of it by calling us up. The number, of course, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Misty Butler from Salt Lake City.
Hey, Misty, how are you?
Great.
I love that name. Misty is a great name.
Thank you.
It is a cheerful and kind name. Are you cheerful and kind?
For the most part.
Right. Except when people start making those play Misty for me jokes again and again, right?
I've heard my share.
I can imagine. Misty, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe and also Esquire magazine, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Misty.
Next, say hello to a deputy editor and resident blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri.
Hi, Misty.
And lastly, making his debut on our panel, it is the host of The Price is Right, Mr. Drew Carey is here.
Hello, Drew.
Thank you. Look at me, Misty. I'm as lonesome as a kitten up a tree.
She's never heard that one.
No.
Hey, can
no.
I ask you a question about Carl? If he's on the jury and somebody gets convicted, does he leave a message on their answer machine?
Yes, Bob won't be able to return your message for 20 to 30 years. It's the least he could do.
The least he could do.
Misty, you're going to play Who's Korva this time. Korva Coleman will reenact three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you will win our prize, Carl Castle's voice, on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Here is your first quote.
Somebody, please make it stop.
That was Dana Milbank of the Washington Post. He was expressing the feelings we feel of millions after what much-anticipated event on Tuesday failed to change anything.
Oh, I forgot the state, but the primary.
The primary, yes. It was a primary. Can you remember where?
Massachusetts?
No.
Lower, to the left.
Why don't you tell her that they pandered by eating Philadelphia cheesesteak?
Yeah, that'll help.
How about Pennsylvania?
I want everybody to think about the last 6 weeks in the Democratic presidential campaign, the Jeremiah Wright videos, the Obama speech on race, the snipers in Bosnia who weren't. You know what difference all that made? Well, as the respected political analyst my grandmother used to say, bupkis. Clinton's margin was 10% 6 weeks ago. She won by 10% on Tuesday. So in the end, Hillary can't win the nomination, but Obama can't seem to beat her. Now, to Obamaniacs, Clinton is the vampire that can't be killed. Or, if you're on her side, she's a really effective and hard-working vampire. Who'll accomplish things. Obama supporters are upset. They're saying it would just be better and happier for everyone if their candidate were just allowed to win right now. Thank you. They've made the same appeal to the National League on behalf of the Chicago Cubs. Why take the nation through the unnecessary difficulty of competition?
You know, I object that you say we haven't learned anything in all this time, because we learned that a girl can bowl and shoot and knock back a shot.
You think so? No, I didn't say we hadn't learned anything. I said nothing had changed. But do you think... I mean, we've learned things that I'm going to be trying to erase from my brain with a wire brush through my ear.
I actually had forgotten about the Weather Underground.
Yeah, they're back.
They're back. Sorry if you're in the audience there, folks. Guy in the back row with the bag in his head. How you doing?
Yeah, they're pretty much core NPR listeners.
Aren't we at this point...
It's our prime demographic.
I mean, and I don't want to put this too strongly, but I think this captures the mood. Aren't we at this point praying for a quick death? I mean...
Are you kidding?
No.
This is hilarious.
You're enjoying this. You're enjoying this ongoing process.
Absolutely. It's this or 2.5 men. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. The best thing this has done is knock down the ratings on American Idol.
And now Indiana. Can you imagine what they're going to have to do in Indiana to pander? There's almost nothing to do in Indiana to pander. Drive a car really fast.
Yeah, I know. There's not a lot of obvious Indiana.
Take a road trip to Chicago.
I'm going to do what everyone in Indiana does. Get out!
All right, Misty, here is your second quote, and I will warn you now, it is surprisingly sensible.
We are in the midst of a crisis. If you can, use public transport.
Like I said, sensible, responsible. What's weird about it is that it was said by the spokesman for the Automobile Association of America. So what caused the nation's chief car advocate to recommend that people not drive so much?
The price of gasoline?
Of course, gas prices, yes. You may notice the next time you pull into a gas station, a man in a business suit sitting behind a desk right there near the pumps. It's a new convenience offered by the oil companies. They're there to approve your loan before you fill the tank. Gas prices approached and in some places passed the $4 a gallon mark this week just after ExxonMobil announced the biggest annual profit in the history of business in America. All right, not a lot of shareholders here, I see, okay. Consumer groups are suggesting modes of transportation that are less expensive than driving, such as hiring 8 footmen to carry you in a sedan chair, riding a sled pulled by polar bears, or buying and using the new Hyundai Kashgo, which is fueled by burning $100 bills.
You know, I live in Texas, and I was driving to work the other day, and I noticed the cars on either side of me were a Lamborghini and a Maserati, and I thought, this isn't hurting everybody.
No, that's clearly not true.
Yeah, as a rich game show host, I'm not feeling the effects.
Yes, I was about to say, has your full-time staff of chauffeurs mentioned any of this to you, Drew?
Why, they wouldn't dare. Or they would be sacked immediately.
The CBS footman.
Why Diego, you say? Why the long face? Nothing, sir, nothing.
Has a tear.
All right, Misty, here is your last quote.
I'm thrilled to be anywhere with high ratings.
So that was someone making a special appearance on NBC's Deal or No Deal. And you can't blame him because his own ratings hit a historic low the same week. Who was it?
President Bush.
President Bush, yes. This week, President Bush made another claim to his place in history. His disapproval ratings, the percentage of the population who think he is doing a bad job, reached 69%, the highest recorded in the history of modern polling. Yeah. So in reaction, maybe to try to get back in our good graces, maybe because he just has nothing left to lose, he's been doing some odd things, including supporting an Iraq veteran who was appearing on a game show. He made the first ever presidential cameo on NBC's Deal or No Deal. He's apparently also been inspired for his new economic stimulus package for the hurting economy. He's now going to encourage all Americans to go on game shows and try to win. Corva, how did Misty do in our quiz?
Well, Peter, Misty had 3 correct answers, so she's going to win Carl Castle's voice on her home answering machine.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing, Misty.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, chances are slim that Republican Congressman Ron Paul will win his bid for the GOP presidential nomination.
Not if I have anything to do with it.
Despite this, fans of Ron Paul can still live out their candidate's libertarian ideals thanks to an effort by some Paulites who are creating what?
A universe of their own making.
Almost. Almost.
No, they are creating a virtual reality Ron Paul universe with a dance party.
Not virtual.
Well, they're declaring the state of Ron Paul?
They are. They're calling it they're calling it Paulville.
Yeah!
That's their idea.
Excellent.
In the dusty West Texas flats, there are 50 acres of land that have been purchased to create Paulville. First of many Paulvilles. The idea being, if Ron Paul can't run the country, then his supporters can at least create their own little community. You know, where they can live in libertarian bliss. No meddling gun laws or morality police. You can opt out of things like utilities or schools. You're just going to be left alone. The idea has inspired the supporters of the other failed presidential candidates to create similar communities. There are plans for Kucinich City, where all residents get a stunning 6-foot-tall wife way out of their league. Mitzburg, where all the houses have tennis courts and none of the gardeners have green cards. And finally, and this is our favorite, freewheeling Giulianistan, which is much like Italy under Mussolini, but with polygamy.
Oh, man.
That was sort of universally offensive. That was great.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Ed Cutler from Papillion, Nebraska.
Papillion, Nebraska. Now, where is that exactly?
Oh, it's just south of Omaha.
All right, so you're out there. What do you do there?
I'm a certified registered nurse anesthetist.
A certified registered nurse anesthetist?
Correct.
Okay, so that means that you're the person helping put people to sleep when they need to be put to sleep.
I put people to sleep, yeah.
Right.
Pretty much my, you know.
I was about to say, we have that in common, but...
Yes.
Ed, welcome to the show. You are going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Corvo, what is Ed's topic?
Whoa, dude, this is so much better than a bloomin' onion.
Who among us doesn't love eating out at Applebee's or Chi-Chi's or Chili's? Well, just when we thought those restaurants could not get any better... This week we read a story that made us want to drive down to the mini mall and wait for the doors to open. Our panelists are going to tell you stories about family restaurant chains getting even more awesome. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I'm ready to play.
First, let's hear from Charlie Pierce.
The proprietors of the Long John Silver's restaurant chain announced this week that they would sponsor a bass fishing tour to compete with the more established Bassmasters Tour. The hitch? The winning fish of each week's tournament will be sent to one of the chain's franchise restaurants to be served to a lucky patron. The customer who orders the fish will win a cash prize totaling $10,000. The prize-winning fish will be served with a full flourish of trumpets, a recorded choir singing the Alleluia chorus, and extra onion rings. We believe this will combine the essential dynamics of competitive fishing, the Long John Silver's brand, and Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, said Peter Walston, Long John Silver's vice president of marketing. Besides, the onion rings really rock.
Your golden ticket is a fried fish at Long John Silver's. Your next story of a family restaurant getting a makeover comes from Drew Carey.
It's from Reuters. Lab Farm, the British biofood giant, has announced plans to bring their chain of casual dining restaurants to the United States, featuring nothing but laboratory-created and chemically-enhanced food. The chain, called Farm Fresh, that's P-H-A-R-M, is already well-known in the UK for its larger-than-life deep-fried broccoli stalks, test-tube veal, and plate-sized chemically-enhanced baked potatoes that serve four. A typical entree of replicated chicken breast with dipping sauce is scheduled to cost around $12 U.S. Said Ian Ferguson, the executive in charge of selling Americans on this uniquely European concept, quote, Americans eat chemically-made food all day, but they aren't aware of it. We're completely above board about the food we serve and can honestly say no animals were harmed in the process of preparing your meal. But just how safe is all this chemically treated, irradiated food? Safer than a cigarette, chuckled Ferguson, puffing on a cigarette. Their first store will be open in Palo Alto, California this winter.
It's all bioengineered food all the time at a new family restaurant coming to the United States. Your last story about a restaurant chain sharpening its image comes from Kiri O'Connor.
You've seen Playboy's Girls of the Big Ten. You've seen the Girls of Enron, the Girls of Survivor, even, yeah, right, the Girls of the Ivy League. Now get ready for the Girls of Olive Garden. See, Hugh Hefner and his hot girlfriend Kendra Wilkinson like hanging at the OG. The blondly bodacious Wilkinson loves her free breadsticks, but she also loves her saucy wenches, and the search for the Playboy spread is on. So if you'd like to mix your creamy salad dressing with a little steamy undressing, apply now.
All right, then. One of these three stories is true. Is it the Long John Silvers, this is from Charlie Pierce, have announced a bass fishing competition in which the winning bass will be killed, fried, and served to a lucky patron? From Drew Carey, the story of a whole new restaurant chain which specializes in massive, delicious, and weirdly artificial bioengineered food? Or from Kiri O'Connor, Playboy planning a new feature, the Girls of the Olive Garden restaurant chain? Which of these is the real story of a family restaurant being all spiced up?
I'm actually going to go with Drew Carey.
You're going to go with Drew Carey?
I really am.
You really are? You think that the...
Yeah, I really think.
Okay. All right, then. Your choice is Drew Carey's story of the completely artificially bioengineered restaurant. Well, we spoke to someone familiar with the real story.
Hugh Hefner's girlfriend Kendra from The Girls Next Door thinks the breadsticks at Olive Garden are as hot as the restaurant servers.
That was John D. Thomas, editor of Playboy.com, explaining why the Olive Garden ladies are now ready for their close-up in centerfold fashion. I'm so sorry, but as you have no doubt figured out, Kiri had the real answer. You did, however, earn a point for Drew Carey on his debut as a panelist, which is pretty exciting.
Sorry, Ed. I'm really sorry. And Peter owes me $100.
That's exactly true.
I bet Peter $100 that somebody would pick my story before this.
So thanks a lot. Ed.
Yes.
Ed, thank you so much for playing.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now the game where we invite notable people on to talk about obscure things. It's called Not My Jump. Most people's image of rock stars is that of the handsome, long-haired sex god who wears tight leather pants, croons into a microphone, wails on his guitar. Well, one of the most successful American pop musicians of the last decade is actually a skinny 40-ish bald guy with glasses from the New York suburbs. You have no idea how happy this makes me. Moby, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
So you know, I'm here for pretty much only one reason.
What is that, Moby?
Which is I want Carl to leave my answering machine message for me.
You do?
Yeah.
Would you then remix it in your classic way?
Why, that's a good segue into the remix that I actually did for you guys.
That's true. This is interesting because we feel that people know Moby's music even if they don't know it's Moby's music. So as a sample, just to show you his art as a great wizard of electronic music
I don't know if this falls into the art category.
Okay.
What this is on Wednesday I was sent some clips from your show.
Yes.
And I was in a hotel room and I was very hungover.
Yeah.
And so I started playing around with them, and I came up with this borderline unlistenable remix of the things that I was sent.
All right, here we go. So ladies and gentlemen, as an introduction to Moby's genius, here is the Moby version of the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me theme.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kessel.
And then people say, President Bush is so sick that he gets to New York to the airport. He's a cop, and he's really not like it. And you probably need one, and it's awful lot. So here's what one of us.
I feel like dancing. I think that's genius.
Did I mention that I was very hungover when that
You mentioned
happened?
That.
Oh, okay.
Or more to the point, you didn't need to. let me ask you about what you do.
Okay.
Now, you started out, if my understanding, as a kid from the burbs, as a punk musician. You were playing in a band in the classic way.
Yeah, actually, when I was very young, I played classical guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I studied music theory. And then when I was 13, I heard The Clash for the first time. So I started playing in a punk rock band,
yeah,
which alienated all my friends from the classical music world.
Sure.
And then when I was around 18, I got into dance music, which alienated all of my friends from the punk rock world, right. Which has essentially left me a completely friendless adult. So thank you for inviting me on the show, because this is the only contact I'm actually going to have with real people today.
So what do you, I've always wondered about this. What exactly do you do? You sample music, you play music, you reprocess it. Is there a simple way of describing it?
See, in a perfect world, you know, earlier you referred to me, what was it? Like you said, I sing the single least attractive person to ever make music. I have a photographic memory. I think that's what you said, right?
It's funny because I did not say that, but I did think it. And it's amazing that you knew that. Anyway, you were saying.
So
you're the least attractive person ever.
In a perfect world, I would be a beautiful man with long hair, and I'd have a great singing voice, and I would stand on stage, and people would just sort of like marvel at my talent. That's not the case. So I have to overcompensate. The way I did that is like by learning how to produce and engineer and play a lot of different instruments. And so when I make records, I'm not necessarily trying to showcase any talent or ability I have. I'm just trying to make music I want to listen to.
Now, I want to ask you about a couple of moments you had in the wider media. You famously had a feud with Eminem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was smart on my part.
That was smart on your part. Well, you made Eminem mad.
I learned my lesson, which is in the future, if I'm going to have public feuds, it's not going to be with the most popular musician on the planet who's surrounded by people with guns. So future feuds, like it's going to be like, I don't know, find me some obscure indie rock band that no one's ever heard of, and I'll have a feud with the drummer.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Who hopefully will be a vegan pacifist.
Exactly. So you said something about his music or lyrics that he did not like.
I don't want to revisit it too much.
I don't think he listens to this show. You can say whatever you want.
I was kind of offended in the late 90s. It seems like there was this ubiquitous trend of misogyny and homophobia in popular culture, and I was offended by it. And I spoke up, and I said, just imagine if you had someone who wrote a song talking about killing blacks and Jews. They'd never get played on the radio. So I was like, well, then why is it okay to have songs about killing women and gay people? You know, it's still hate speech.
Right.
I just found it really disturbing that you had these commercial radio stations playing really loathsome, hateful records.
Right. And so he actually mentioned you in a song.
Yeah, and he dressed up like me in a video, which is probably the best press I've ever gotten.
Really?
Oh, yeah, without question. All of a sudden, like, all these, like, 13, 14-year-old kids in the suburbs knew who I was. Maybe not in the most positive way, but still, I'll take whatever attention I can get.
No such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah.
Before we go into the game, I did want to ask you a question. We have been, this is an ongoing project of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You've had a number of notable musicians on the show, and we have all asked them the same question.
Oh, no.
And it's a question that we usually can anticipate the answer to. The question is, what, in your opinion, sir, is the sexiest instrument? Now, obviously, you know, we had Branford Marsalis. He chose the saxophone, you know. Al Yankovic, big surprise, picked the accordion. But when it came to you, we were like, what's he going to say? A MacBook Pro? We have no idea. Mm-hmm. So what, Moby, in your opinion,
is the
sexiest instrument to play?
The sexiest instrument?
Yes.
I'm going to go with the bass guitar. The electric bass guitar, because it's the most confident instrument. Like, if you look at bands, it's always like the singers and the guitar players who are in rehab and throwing televisions out windows.
Yeah.
The bass player, they're just confident. They're calm. They stand there because they're always the loudest, and no one ever tells them to turn down.
Right.
And they can drown everybody out. So I'm going to go with the confidence of the humble electric bass guitar.
In your experience,
yes,
traveling around the country, playing music, knowing musicians, do the bass guitarists get a lot of chicks?
Well, the thing is, because I play a lot of instruments. So I play guitar, I play drums, I play keyboards, I play bass. I have to say, whenever I play bass, I mean, as a small, physically challenged white guy, when I play the bass, I feel slightly sexy.
All right. Slightly. Moby, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You are the most legendary flop in Broadway history.
Namely, you are, in this case, Moose Murders, a play that closed on its opening night 25 years ago. Now, there's going to be a commemorative one-night-only staging of the infamous play at Sardi's Restaurant in New York later this year, so we thought we would chip into the festivities by asking you three questions about this infamous disaster. Answer two questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice, on their home answering machine. Corva, who is Moby playing for?
Peter, he's playing for Kaylee Bradford of East Lansing, Michigan.
All right. Ready to go?
Okay.
Here we go.
And by the way, preemptively, Kaylee, whoever you are,
yes.
I'm sure you're a very nice person. I'm sorry that I'm representing you because I'm going to do a terrible job. I know it. I'm having a panic attack. Does anyone have any Ativan?
You are so not a rock star. It's so funny. All right. The play itself. First question is about the play itself. Moose Murders is a mystery farce about murders committed in an upstate New York vacation lodge. The action of the play...
Oh, involving moose.
Involving a moose. The action of the play climaxes when what happens? Is it A, the murder victim who's been lying on the floor for the entire second act wakes up, announces she's just fainted, and everybody has a big laugh? Curtain. Is it B, a man entirely wrapped in bandages from head to toe rises from his wheelchair to kick a person dressed as a moose in the crotch? Or C, an actual live moose is led on stage and points its antlers at one of the characters who then admits his guilt?
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, the murder victim who's been lying on the floor just gets up, ha ha, I just fainted. Actually, the answer was B, the man in the wheelchair. The man in the wheelchair, the character was named Stanley Holloway. He was a paralyzed tycoon. And the guy in the moose suit is, I think, a character named Joe Buffalo Dance, fake Indian proprietor of the hotel. Why he is dressed in a moose suit and kicked in the crotch, I cannot tell you.
How does the paralyzed guy kick somebody in the crotch?
Well, that was the point. He's been paralyzed the whole play, but apparently some instinct or...
See, it's not a good play.
No, that's the whole point. Very wise, Kiri. Very wise. All right. Next question is about the performance itself. Theater critic John Simon said it wasn't just the play that made Moose Murders, quote, as close as I ever hoped to get to the bottomless pit. No. It was also what? A, the guy in the front row who came to the play 20 minutes late and completely covered in vomit. B, the playwright who sat behind him and kept laughing loudly and alone at all the bad jokes. Or C, the clumsy product placements in the script that were put in by the desperate producers.
In the interest of consistency, I'll go with A.
You're going to go with A. You're right. It was, in fact, the guy covered in vomit. Simon wrote, quote, he smelled so bad that he sent three nearby critics and their companions scurrying for the back of the theater. Okay, this is very exciting. You've got one right with one to go. You get this correct, you win it all. Here we go. Finally, we come to the best part of the Moose Murders saga, the reviews. Which of these was actually said about Moose Murders by critic Brendan Gill of The New Yorker? Was it A, it would insult the intelligence of an audience consisting entirely of amoebas? Was it B, Moose Murders is the worst thing created by human ingenuity since mustard gas? Or was it C, in the first act you pray for intermission, in the second act you pray for your own quick death?
I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C, in the first act you pray for intermission, in the second act you pray for your own quick death. I'm afraid to say it was A.
Really?
Yes, he said it would insult the intelligence of an audience consisting entirely of amoebas. So, Korva, how did Moby do in our quiz?
Moby had one correct answer. So he doesn't win the prize for Kaylee Bradford of East Lansing, Michigan.
Can I... Okay, as a crummy consolation prize, can I call her and leave a message on her answering machine?
I think I'll be up to her. Moby's new album, Last Night, is out now, but what we think is his masterwork, his reworking of the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me theme song, is now available for your listening pleasure on our website, waitwait.npr.org. Moby, thank you so much for being here with us and playing our game. Moby, ladies and gentlemen. In just a minute, Korva waxes poetic in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Charlie, there's been a lot of attention paid to seemingly minor mistakes made by political candidates this year. Yes, it's true. You may have heard. Well, a Republican congressional candidate His name is Tony Zirkle. He's from Indiana. He made a similar boo-boo, which we just bet his opponents will exploit unfairly by agreeing to speak to what group?
Tony decided that he would give a speech, not on the subject of the banquet, by the way, but on something else, at an Adolf Hitler birthday party.
That's exactly right. Tony Zirkle is a perennial fringe candidate in Indiana Republican politics. He's run for Congress twice before, unsuccessfully, on a platform of opposing pornography and bringing back the guillotine. Really. When asked why he went to Chicago to speak at a banquet thrown by the American National Socialist Workers Party to celebrate Hitler's birthday, he said that he didn't know enough about the group to either favor it or oppose it. He also says, and I stress all of this is true, he didn't know they were, quote, necessarily of the Nazi mindset, unquote, because he said they're not called Nazis, but National Socialists. Thus he was confused. Of course, in the pictures the group proudly posted of their distinguished visitor addressing them, there is a huge portrait of Adolf Hitler right behind him, and the guys all sitting in front of him at the head table all are wearing swastika armbands. And we love this. It's so sweet. The Nazis, they hung a little banner of glittery letters that read, Happy Birthday, Adolf. But, you know, maybe it was a different swastika-loving Hitler's birthday. Oh, he said, I thought it was Steve Hitler, he said. To be fair, we should stress that his own Republican Party has completely disowned him. They hate him. They wish he would stop. They say that this is a quote, they said that the R after his name really stands for repulsive.
Ooh.
They're not happy with him. Charlie, the Florida Senate considered legislation this week that would fine any driver who takes to the roadway with what automotive accessory?
These subverbal human noises I'm making, Peter, are an appeal for a hint.
I understand. Well, if the law passes, then essentially you'll have to neuter your Ford Explorer.
You would have to, lengthy tailpipes?
No. I'm being far more literal. Good one. As one account put it, it makes the truck look like the south end of a northbound cow or bull.
Udders?
No, not udders. I stressed bull.
Oh, testicles.
Yes. Fake testicles. This is what I say to people who are offended by this. Do not blame us for talking about it. Blame the Florida legislator for taking it up as an issue. These are ersatz scrotums. They are known by their brand name Truck Nuts, NUTZ, and they are increasingly popular among drivers of pickups, SUVs, and other manly vehicles, which apparently are not already compensation enough. A new state law in Florida may make them illegal. Senator Kerry Baker proposed the bill, but Senator Stephen Geller disagrees with the proposition. Says
they debated this?
They debated this. That's my point. Don't blame us. Senator Geller...
Someone moved the table to notion.
Exactly. Senator Geller disagreed with the proposition. He said, quote, I find it shocking we tell people with metallic testicles on their bumpers that this is a violation, unquote. And this is the best part. Another state senator, Jim King, actually admitted to owning a pair, which he called, quote, an expression of truckliness.
See, I have a perfect solution for all this.
What is your perfect solution?
Truck underwear.
There you are.
Hey, when you said it was they were ersatz testicles, I thought ersatz was a little animal.
No, no. They harvest them.
I was like, what ersatz kind of animal is an ersatz?
So is the bill passed or not?
The bill is, I believe, under debate.
We must save the ersatz. It
passed the Florida Senate, and it will go to the House. And if the House passes it and the governor signs it, you will no longer be able to drive your trucks around with the truck nuts on them.
So you got gross ersatz on the back.
It was very unsuccessful, Peter. They tried them first in North Dakota, but in the middle of February, they all went back in the trunk.
Oh.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Mara from Amherst.
Hey, how are things in Amherst?
Yeah, really, really nice.
That's what I'm told. I've never been to Amherst, sadly, but I understand it's this beautiful oasis of kindness and love and political correctness in the midst of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
That's about it. Well, Mara, welcome to the show. Now, Corva Coleman is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play? Yay. Here is your first limerick.
Things with parents we ethically treat, but for mealtimes we're trying to cheat. And some cold cuts we'll grab from a dish in the lab. We are trying to grow some fake
meat.
Meat, yes, very good. What could be better than a sizzling pork sausage fresh off the grill? How about sizzling pork-like sausage straight from the Petri dish? That's what the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, is hoping for in a controversial move that has caused a near civil war within the organization. PETA is offering a $1 million prize to the first person to come up with a method to produce commercially viable quantities of in vitro meat at competitive prices by 2012. The theory being it might be a bizarre perversion of nature, but at least we won't have to be mean to any more adorable little pigs. However, the move was protested by a new group, PETHA, P-E-T-H-A, or People for the Ethical Treatment of Horrifying Abominations. Here is your next limerick.
Effete speech is a dead horse they flay. So is mincing about acting fey. But stop a bad joke, and all free speech will choke. So it still is okay to say...
I don't know.
You don't know? Mincing about acting fey? I can't believe I just said that.
No, I don't know. Play? Play?
Gay? Gay? Gay?
Yeah.
Yes, gay? You're right. Gay? Gay?
Gay?
Good news, British free speech lovers. Now that a proposed ban in Britain's House of Lords has been rejected, you are free to make all the gay jokes you want. If the measure had passed, allusions to strangely neat apartments and a love for Broadway musicals would have been a thing of the past, and there would have been more arrests, like that of Oxford student Sam Brown, who was hauled in after he made the mistake of calling a mounted policeman's horse gay. Television star Rowan Atkinson of Mr. Bean in Blackadder fame was among those who spoke out against the ban, which ultimately failed when the British peers realized the new law would basically ban all mentions of actor Tom Cruise. Which we can still say until he sues us. Here is your last limerick.
The Wii raises heart rates, we're told. So to seniors, the systems are sold. Repeat business is tame. They don't want to buy games. Just one game is fine when you're...
old.
Old, yes, very good. As you know, the Nintendo Wii is a huge success. Everyone from grandpas and housewives are playing Wii tennis in their living rooms. But the problem is, that's all they're playing. Old folks are perfectly happy with the sports games that come with a console. They have no interest in running out and buying any new games. So you know, they're happy with the bowling and maybe, if they're daredevils, the cow racing on Wii Play. As a result, game sales are down. Software designers are having to come up with new ideas to get older Wii users off the Barker loungers. So coming soon to a store near you, Denny's Diner Dash, in which players compete to get to the restaurant in time for the early bird special, and the senior citizen-themed first-person shooter, I Said Get Off of My Lawn. Corva, how did Mara do on our quiz?
Peter, Mara had 3 correct answers, so she'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice, on her home answering machine.
Thank you.
Well done. Congratulations. Thank you so much for playing, Mara. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Corva, can you give us the scores?
Yep. Charlie is in the lead with 4 points. Drew is second with 3, and Kiri is in third with 2 points.
All right, Kiri, you're in third place, so you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Members of Congress were shown intelligence that allegedly proves that blank helped Syria build a nuclear reactor.
North Korea.
Right. Former President Jimmy Carter has denied that Condoleezza Rice warned him not to meet with blank.
Hamas.
Right. New blank sales in the U.S. plummeted to a 16-year low.
Home.
Right. Her win at the Honda Indy 300 in Japan makes blank the first woman to win an IndyCar race.
Danica Patrick.
Right. Police in Louisville figured correctly that Joshua L. Moore might be carrying illegal drugs after they caught him blanking.
Using illegal drugs.
No, pumping gas into an imaginary car. Sales of their notebook computers and touchscreen phones led blank to report sharply higher sales and profits.
Apple?
Right. According to a new study, what a mother eats during pregnancy can determine the child's blank.
Sex.
Right. Neuroscientists in Norway believe they may be able to predict and prevent simple mental errors with the use of a blank.
A cattle prod.
No. They won't do that again. No, the use of a mind-reading hat. You know, a lot of times...
Wait, does the hat read your mind, or do you put it on and you can read someone else's mind?
No, it reads your mind. I'll explain.
Please.
You know how a lot of times you'll be doing some repetitive task, and then suddenly your mind wanders and you make an error, you drop the plate, or you invade the wrong country? Well, scientists at the University of Bergen discovered that the brain sends out signals of an impending lapse in concentration up to 6 minutes before it happens. So if you could fit a brain scanner into a hat, it could sense the distinct pattern of brain waves and sound a warning. Of course, it might not work. If you're performing some delicate task, it might make it worse to have your hat screaming, "You're about to screw it up!" Korva, how did Kiri do on our quiz?
Well, Kiri had 6 right for 12 more points, so she now has 14 points and has taken the lead.
All right, very well done. Drew, you are up next. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, Robert Gates announced that he had tapped blank to take over as the commander of U.S. Central Command.
Petraeus.
Right. Texas officials finished taking DNA samples from children removed from a blank compound earlier this month.
The FDSL sect or whatever it is.
Yeah, the polygamous compound, yes. Because of skyrocketing food prices, both Sam's Club and Costco are restricting the amount of rice. Yes, customers can buy. The CEOs of Delta and Northwest Airlines told Congress that their planned blank was in the best interest of passengers.
Merger.
Right. In an effort to avoid alarming guests, a 5-star hotel in China had its window washers blank.
Naked.
No. Wear Spider-Man costume.
Wow.
Be very calm. They're all Spider-Man. Get over it, is what Justice Antonin Scalia said to CBS when asked about the Supreme Court's decision in 2000 regarding blank.
The Florida election.
Right, Bush v. Gore. The mayor of North Arlington, New Jersey, used his town's emergency automated calling system, also known as robocalls, to ask his constituents blank.
I can't remember. He robocalls to ask his constituents for pizza.
He used the robocalls to ask his constituents to help him find his lost cat.
Right! Right!
Normally, if your cat disappears, you just walk around yelling for it like an idiot. It's not going to come. It's a cat. But if you're the mayor, you can pay a $10 fee to the city clerk to cover costs and record a greeting sent to 8,500 registered voters, asking them to look for the missing cat. 200 people called in response, but the cat was found inside the mayor's own home. After renovation, the mayor thanked everybody for their concern, presumably by calling them at 3 in the morning. Korva, how did Drew do on our quiz?
Well, Drew had 5 right, and he got 10 more points for a total of 13 points, but Kiri is 14 and has the lead.
Okay, so here's the big question that I know you look forward to whenever you come to do this. How many, then, does Charlie need to win?
Charlie needs 5 questions right to tie. He needs 6 to win.
All right, Charlie, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. U.S. officials arrested an 84-year-old man suspected of selling nuclear secrets to blank in the 1980s.
Israel.
Right. A U.S. envoy this week said that blank was the clear loser in Zimbabwe's presidential election.
Mugabe.
Right. Senator Harry Reid said he and other Democrats may urge the several hundred blanks to stop waiting and announce who they support for president.
Superdelegates!
Huzzah from the sky. Tuesday, April 22nd, was the 38th annual blank day.
Earth Day.
Yes. A California businessman is teaming with the designers of Disneyland to create a $500 million theme park in the middle of blank.
Death Valley.
No, Baghdad. Good luck with that. According to a 2008 Harris Interactive poll, the favorite book of all time for American adults, regardless of demographic group, is blank.
The Da Vinci Code.
Close, the Bible. Four Florida men arrested for vandalism told police they were actually out just to go cow tipping, an excuse which failed miserably because blank.
Because they went to downtown Miami where there are no cows.
Because there were no cows. Exactly right. Deputies responding to a report of a damaged communications tower found four men in the field. They explained, no, they just tipped over a cow. They'd be going now. Thank you. Deputies searched the area for any sounds of cow life, but no cows could be found within miles of the field. The men were quickly arrested for loitering and prowling despite their protests that, Bossy set me up! Bossy set me up! Corbett, did Charlie do well enough to win?
Well, he needed 6 to win. He needed 5 to tie. He got 5. And so for 14 points, Kiri and Charlie are this week's co-champions.
Yeah, well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, on what TV show will President Bush show up next? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And the Wallace Foundation, whose Knowledge Center is where education leaders can go to learn about improving teaching and learning. Downloads at wallacefoundation.org. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Now, panel, you saw him on Deal or No Deal. You loved him on Deal or No Deal. Where will President Bush show up next? Charlie Pierce.
A special Judge Judy live from The Hague.
Kiri O'Connor.
Big Brother, because he thinks it's about something else.
And Drew Carey.
President Bush will appear on Fox's Moment of Truth, where for $200,000 he will admit to having a torrid love affair with Donald Rumsfeld prior to the start of the war in Iraq.
And if President Bush shows up on any of these shows, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Corva Coleman, for so ably filling in once again for Carl this week. Thanks also to Drew Carey, Charlie Pierce, and Kiri O'Connor. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.